order and will begin our regular business. And when Legislator Roberts comes, we'll ask him if there's anything he wants to revisit or he can weigh in his votes. I've discussed the agenda with him already, so I think we're in an okay place. So let's call the meeting to order. Jay, do you mind taking attendance?
Sure thing. Chairwoman Bartels?
Here.
Deputy Chair Roberts? Legislator Gavaris?
Present.
Legislator Heppner?
Here.
And Legislator Ronk? You currently have 3 members present, 2 absent.
Okay, great. I hope everyone's had a chance to look at the minutes and transcripts from both September 14th and September 29th. I'll entertain a motion to accept both.
So moved.
Second.
Okay. Is there any discussion? Does anyone want to make any changes or any issues? Okay. Then all in favor of approving the September 14th and September 29th minutes?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? None opposed. Okay, we're gonna move through resolutions. I wanna recognize and thank all the department heads for being here. I think the resolutions will be fairly quick and I wanna take them first in anticipation of Legislator Roberts' arrival because I think he'll really want to hear your presentations. So the first resolution is resolution number 300, setting a public hearing on proposed local law number 12 of 2020, a local law amending local law number 4 of 2018, a local law establishing an Ulster County human rights law to be held on Tuesday, November 17th, 2020 at 7 p.m.
I'll move.
Second.
Okay. So on the resolution, Legislator Heppner.
Yeah, so it's my understanding that the different councils are still discussing. I don't have a current update from Legislative Council Rigucci, but I know those conversations are happening. At this point, I'll make a motion to postpone.
Okay, do I have a second to the postponement? Okay, all in favor of postponing?
Aye.
Aye. And opposed? None opposed. Resolution number 326, appointing Commissioner of Elections.
I'll move and congratulations to Mr. Quigley.
Yes, we have Mr. Quigley on the line. Congratulations in advance to Mr. Quigley. Is there any further discussion? Okay, all in favor of resolution 326?
Aye.
Resolution number 343, authorizing the Ulster County Executive to enter into an agreement to accept a grant from the Center for Tech and Civic Life for Safe and Secure Election Administration and amending the 2020 adopted budget, Ulster County Board of Election.
So moved.
Second.
Okay, we have the commissioners with us. Do you want to tell us anything about this grant? I know it's accepting money, so we don't have to talk at length, but if you want to just give us a little update, that would be great.
Sure. This is a new grant stream that we were made aware of. It was sort of last minute, but it's going to allow us to offset a lot of part-time costs. That's one of the bigger expendable items that we have are taking a lot of advantage of as we've been very busy getting ready for the election in 2 weeks. So we're very excited to add this to the other pools of money that we've got this year and really use that to offset a lot of this extra help and a couple of other items. So we'll be busy applying for our reimbursements as soon as we can, because a lot of them expire at the end of the year. So we have a plan ready to go to get that all done. And if anybody has any other questions on the grant stuff, let us know. We're happy to address any of your questions or concerns.
Are there any questions? Legislator Heppner?
No, I just want to commend the Board of Elections. This has always been crazy year across the board, but especially in regards to elections and supporting our democratic process throughout the COVID pandemic, especially with the different changes and executive orders that have come down. And amongst all that, I can't remember a time that it's been a few years now in laws and rules, there's been this many grants coming through, and I just commend them for doing the work to take advantage of those opportunities, and I think it's a very positive trend.
Second that. Any other comments? Okay, so on the resolution, all in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, passes unanimously. Resolution number 345, setting a public hearing on proposed local law number 13 of 2020, a local law amending the Ulster County Charter, local law number 2 of 2006, and amending the administrative code for the County of Ulster, local law number 10 of 2008, to further clarify budget modifications after adoption, to be held on Tuesday, November 17, 2020 at 7:10 p.m.
So moved.
Second.
Okay. So I can say that on resolution 345, I've spoken to one of the sponsors, Legislator Archer, and she asked that we postpone it a month while they continue to have conversations in leadership. So I'll entertain a motion to postpone.
I'll move to postpone.
Second.
Okay, on the postponement, any discussion? Welcome, Legislator Roberts. We're on resolution 345.
Thank you. Sorry I'm late.
No problem. Okay, so on the postponement, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. And now that Legislator Roberts has joined us, do you want to record your, we postponed resolution number 300, resolution number 326, appointing the Commissioner of Elections, passed unanimously, but I'm sure you'll want to add your vote to that.
Yes, I would.
Okay. And resolution number 343 also passed unanimously, accepting a grant.
Add my vote. Thank you.
Great. Thank you. All right. So now we will move into the 2021 budget reviews. The first that I have listed is the Department of Insurance. Director Doreen Whitney's joining us.
Hi.
You are hi. So I'm going to hand the floor over to you to start, if you could walk us through your 2021 budget and sure. Anything that you especially want to highlight, and then we'll open the floor for questions.
Okay. Well, with the insurance budget, I typically go as tight as possible on any normal year. With the workers' comp program is the biggest of the dollar amounts that we have. It's the S fund, which is charged back. So it ends up being a zero net. But what I did this year was I did not budget for a lot of settlements that we would normally settle to save a lot of money over the lifetime of a bad claim, let's say. Like, if you have somebody that has more than one injury or even just one injury, but it's very expensive, if they're very young, we're going to be on their medical bills for the life of that person. So what I would do sometimes is we'll do a lump sum settlement just to get rid of the claims so that they're closed out for life. And over the course of the life of the claim, it can be a lot of money. I just did one a couple weeks ago. It saved, we estimated it to be $904,000 that we saved by laying out 100 or 130. So that's the biggest piece of the insurance department is the workers' comp program. And we cover all the towns, the villages, the city, the schools, county employees, the college, and many of the volunteer fire districts for the comp program. So it's very large. It's typically around a $10 million budget. I lowered it this year by quite a lot. Like I tried to shave, it was approximately 14%. I lowered it by not budgeting for as many, like maybe private investigators, let's say, or we're gonna have to scale it back next year. So I just chopped it as best I could. Ulster County is a plan of the insurance plan too, as a member, I mean. And we equate to about a third of the plan typically. So when I shaved that workers' comp budget, it also was able to lower the county's premium that pays into the S fund as well. I worked with Bert to do this to try to get it as narrow as we could without getting into trouble when running out of money. So the 1910 part of the budget is the unallocated insurance. And that is like general liability, auto claims, property damage, it's lawsuits, and it's a lot of insurances that are not workers' comp or disability. That typically, you know, I go to the attorneys who are handling the files, what's going to be ripened up for trial in the following year. So what I do is we have a $75,000 deductible on those. And if I know that six cases are coming due, I'll just basically multiply 75,000 times six and then add in a little more for the littler claims. that don't necessarily go to court. That's how I did that. And the other thing we do, the 9055 section, which is part of the A fund, that's our disability program. And it covers the off-the-job injury for county workers and the college workers. We don't handle a lot of that. I mean, there's just not that many claims. So I was able to shave that a little bit too. And I based it in part because I know we have a big reduction in the workforce coming up. So I just thought I'd be able to be safe by cutting that. So basically, the insurance department is myself. I'm the insurance officer. Suzanne Levetri is the deputy insurance officer. Andrew Zink is a confidential secretary. And Melissa Mastro is a senior claims examiner. And she works in conjunction with our third-party administrator for the workers' comp piece of it. And she also handles the disability. So if NCA Comp is our third-party administrator, they can't really settle claims until they have our authority to do so. They can give us the recommendations and we can work things out, but we basically are very much in control of the bank. So there's that. And the only insurance we don't do in our department, we don't handle the health insurance and we don't handle unemployment, but pretty much we do all the other stuff. So that's pretty much it.
Legislator Heppner? You're on mute, legislator.
Thank you. Just a quick question, because this obviously in different contexts came up in speaking with the public defender's office and as well as District Attorney Clegg. With the COVID-19 pandemic and, you know, the different settlements, you know, that you mentioned in the beginning of your presentation, have a lot of those been delayed? And if so, do you see them delayed into next year, into where next year we could be facing a much higher number because of carryover of claims that have been delayed as part of, you know, people not being able to gather and so on during COVID? I'm just kind of curious if that plays in to the work you all do.
It's been a lot of delays because for the workers' comp settlements that we do, we have to basically send the injured worker to our doctors, you know, so it's an independent.
Exactly.
So for like the first 3 months or something, that just wasn't happening. We were doing file reviews instead, just on the papers, but it did slow things down. Hearings have all been virtual this year. We don't really work with the public defender's office unless we're handling somebody in that office.
They were just talking about how big of a queue they had, you know, based on how many cases they are looking at down the road because of delays. So I was just curious if next year's budget we should be, you know, should expect a higher number because there's going to be a lot more claims processed.
I kind of think so. And I shaved as tightly as I dared on this year, just based on the information.
Understandable.
But yes, I do see a definite lag in all of the claims, not just the comps, but everything.
And do you have an estimate of that queue? How many of you think, or is that kind of?
You know, I'm going to get quick here. Right now, I'd say that maybe two of the ones that I thought were going to settle this year are probably going to get dropped into January. Okay. But we can still classify that expense at that point if that's when it happens. Yeah. After February, we won't be able to do that. So we could load up the 2021, you know, then the following year. I think a lot of it really comes down to this. It's like we can never predict how many accidents and things we're going to have.
Absolutely.
So you never want to be stuck with just what you know. You really need to have a cushion there because, you know, God forbid, like the UCAT bus accident, you know, where somebody died. I mean, this is still in the works. Like, we're still working on that file. And that was that'll be 3 years, I think, this year.
Yep.
Yeah. So, you know,
thank you for your answers.
I'm sorry.
Oh, no, sorry. Go ahead.
No, that's what I thought you said something. But yes, I would say things have been delayed generally. But for that same reason, we have for the S fund, particularly, whatever's left in the pot at the end of the year goes into our contribution to the reserve, which means that it's a bank account. Essentially, it's cash on hand that would be used to pay open claims. So there's no harm, no foul in that one. We've spent less this year in some ways because of this stuff, too. So in the comp program, it's actually good because it will end up in the bank and it will be used in the future. So, and it reduces our open liability. So that's a good thing. If anything good can come of all this.
Yeah. No, thank you. That was very informative.
Okay, you're welcome.
Are there any other questions from the committee members? Legislator Roberts?
Yes, Ms. Whitney, you said that some of the towns and the fire departments share in your services with workers' comp?
Yeah, the Ulster County Self-Insurance Plan, we cover most of the volunteer fire departments. We cover the county, the college, the city, 7 schools, the villages, and all the towns.
Okay, and obviously they pay their fair share.
Yeah, so we have a premium schedule that we do. And the county, because we're the largest participant with the most covered lives, we are typically a third of the whole pot. So, but yes, it's based on the way we calculate the premiums. It's based on the last 3 years of loss experience, how much we spent on the medical and their wages. Mm-hmm. And the other half of it's calculated, it's based on their portion, a tax valuation to the whole pie. So if the town's a smaller town, it will have a lower tax valuation typically.
Yeah. Now, do the towns pay you or do they pay the insurance company?
They pay us. They pay the county.
And that would show up as revenue on...
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, it's the last... if you looked on the 1720 line, it's the S fund. Okay. The last 4 digits are 2222, and that would be most of it right there.
Thank you for your time.
You're welcome.
Are there any other questions from committee members? Okay, I have just 2 questions. One, you talk about the cut to the workers' comp settlements and shaving that off. How confident do you feel with that cushion based on everything else that you just said? And the follow-on to that is, would you be coming back in the event that there was a settlement that you deemed worthy if there was no money left because of shaving it off?
Well, I think we have enough there that we could settle like a couple of big ones if we had to. I mean, we could certainly settle the smaller ones with what I put in there. I'm sure of that. It's just that typically you never really know. Some claimants, they're looking for $300,000, you know. Some people are looking for $1 million. Some people are looking for $60,000. So I know we can settle some things with what I did put in there. And there's typically a little bit of a buffer. We pay New York State quarterly assessments. And I think because the payrolls are going to be less, I think we might end up with a little more money in that line where I could take that if I had to. I think we're going to be okay there.
Do you know, I don't see it in the budget that in front of me. Do we know what the actual is year to date for 2020, what we've spent?
Well, I did these reports like in June. Let me see. For which line? I mean, which side of the budget?
For the expense on workers' comp in terms of then awards, the S fund.
You know, I could do a better job and get back to you in an email.
Okay, that would be fine.
Yeah, because I'll rerun the reports tomorrow and then I'll have up-to-date numbers for you.
Okay, because I see the 19 actual is in excess of what's recommended for this year, and the 18 actual, I'm hoping, was an anomaly because it was very significant. That was $4.1 million in the 18 actual. But yeah, if you could get us the numbers, that would be a huge help. And then my other question.
I'll zoom off. I'll do all the lines for you.
Oh, that's great. Thank you. And then my other question in terms of the personnel positions, you have a confidential secretary that looks like the position was created this year, and an accountant was removed. Were you using an accountant before and you no longer are, or what's happened?
Yeah, she retired. So at that point, she was a big help to me clerically, as well as doing some accounting with me. Now, pretty much I'm doing all the accounting in there. But it's like with all the paperwork, I mean, she was just great about, you know, depositing checks, all the things that have to do with New World. She was a big help with that. But she was there for about 22 years or something. I forget exactly, at least 20 though. So she was really, really a big part of the office. And when she left, she did stay on for a few weeks just to try to train the confidential secretary in some of that work. And what he's responsible for is entering every single insurance certificate for every vendor in the county. He's maintaining OnBase system, which is where we see all of our insurances and our certificates. And this is for any vendor that we do any business with at all for the county. So it's a very important thing.
Was she doing that duty before?
Yeah, she, and that's what she trained him in before she left. And that was about all she really had time to train him on. You know, she did a few other things, but she was only doing a couple weeks of training, and then she was gone. So I have no idea how to do the job that he's doing right now with the certificates. I can muddle my way through it, but I don't even think my computer has access to it right now. So actually everybody else in the office has access to that and has learned it. So I feel good that we are cross-trained that way, even though I don't know how to do it personally.
But you've had to pick up the accounting duties? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I've always pretty much done the accounting duties. I was the accountant in that office. I started there in 89, and I've always just been in charge of the financials. And I always handled it with a little bit of help from Alice. She would help keep it, you know, she ended up being a big help in some of the more manual type reporting that I had to do. But I'm pretty much taking that on again. And I intend to try to train, you know, different functions of it so that it's not just one person knowing everything.
Okay. Are there any other questions for Director Whitney? Okay. Thank you so much. Thank you so much for coming and
thank you.
Providing us the presentation, and we'll look forward to the follow-up report.
Okay.
And we may have further questions, in which case we'll reach out to you aside from the committee.
Okay, great. Now I'll get you the new numbers, because the last time I ran the report, like I said, was when I was working on the budget, so it's outdated.
Okay, great. Thank you great. Very much.
Thank you.
Okay, so the next department that we're going to look at is Weights and Measures. I see Director James D. Gasparis is with us.
I'm here.
Thank you for joining us.
No problem.
Walk us through your budget.
Well, non-personnel is really $6,500. Really all we use it for is mostly travel, buying security seals, and other supplies we need for just getting by through the year. The only other little part on there is $250 to have my equipment tested, which I have. I try to offset the years and have my equipment calibrated by the state every year for that $250. On the revenue side, it's all basically the same. It's about the same revenue. We raised it a little bit because with our scanner accuracy law, our Family Dollar decided they were going to join in, so it gave us extra revenue, which wasn't posted to last year's budget, which kind of helped us get us underneath that percentage back again that we needed to get to. Other than that, everything's pretty much self-explanatory.
Okay. Do we have any questions? Any of the committee members have any questions? Okay. Well, thank you. Thank you very much for taking
the time
to join us.
We have a great night.
Your work. You too.
Thank you.
Okay. Moving on, we have the Human Rights Commission. Commissioner Tyrone Wilson. I saw him. Oh, there you are. Okay.
Hey.
Hi.
So
the floor is yours, sir.
Cool. So my budget is pretty, you know, simple as well. The one thing that we did add on was for our miscellaneous contractual expense, which is listed as $20,000 there, but $5,000 of that is for outreach to the underserved population. And I think, you know, that's a need. It actually help us, you know, to get on the ground a little bit more to the underserved population. And, you know, that can go as far as, you know, information, getting more information to that population, being more of a reach to that population. So $5,000 of that $20,000 on line item 4,600. The $15,000 that's there is to be used for hiring a hearing officer for any type of monetary monies that we may need to hire a hearing officer in any of those cases that we need to send up to the lawyers and to hire a hearing officer to hear the case. Everything else there is, you know, is pretty simple, you know, supplies and, you know, professional services, conference expenses. We chopped down because we do want to have more conferences. I think we need to have more conferences for people to get more familiar with the human rights and what we're about and you know, and how to get in contact with us and let them know that we hear and that we get a little bit more broader in the reach as far as those the county is concerned. Other than that, I mean, that's, you know, that's kind of all I see that's, you know, that should be, you know, shown or spoken of as far as where we're at right now.
Okay, are there any questions for the commissioner? Legislator Roberts?
Thank you, Madam Chair.
I can't hear her.
Yeah, I don't, we're having a little problem with your audio, Legislator Roberts. Want to try again?
Did I lose you?
No, now we have you. Can you, okay. Can everyone hear?
Yeah, I'm sorry. Sir, of that $5,000, is that for the outreach? Is that more for literature, handouts, mailings?
Yeah, it will be a focus point for us to really reach, you know, on the population. It'll be for literatures and handouts, the creation of handouts. Just more information that we know that we can do more of a direct, direct hand-to-hand, if need be, to this population. Because usually the population, we usually catch them if something is happening and we gather them in. So that'll be the greatest opportunity to make sure that they can have literature to take with them that they may need if anything occurs.
Thank you.
Legislator Heppner?
Yes, and just to add to Legislator Roberts' question and add to the commissioner's response, I know, you know, as a co-sponsor and co-chair of the task force with Legislator Ronk, with our most current human rights law, I mean, in a lot of those conversations in that law, we actually expanded allocation to the Human Rights Commission. And one of the biggest, you know, goals of that and talking to the many stakeholders that were on that task force was for exactly what the commissioner is discussing. To, you know, make sure that the residents of Ulster County were aware of both, you know, the somewhat new and different services and opportunities available through the Human Rights Commission because of that law. So I just wanted to kind of add that background from the task force perspective.
Thank you. Commissioner Wilson, are you, due to COVID, are you having a harder time in terms of outreach? Are you noticing any change in terms of the number of complaints or how people find you based on the challenges related to COVID?
Yeah, it's been challenging, but the calls haven't stopped. I think a lot of it too has a lot to do to who I am in the community. So people have followed me and they know that I'm in this position. But there's people who don't know me and who those people is who I'm concerned about, who may not know of this position and what we do here. Because a lot of the calls that's been coming in, a lot has been somebody who even knew me or knew somebody that knows me. So, and they've been making that connection that way. And that's what I believe been keeping the calls coming in. To be honest, the call, it's been a lot of calls this year, a lot. We've been going out. We've been going out meeting people in parks and stuff like that. And some at job sites, you know, outside. So we've been finding our way that way to really address a lot of the issues that we've been receiving.
Okay, thank you. Are there any other questions for the commissioner? Okay, thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you for bringing your budget presentation, taking the time this evening, and for all your good work.
Thank you all.
Thank you. Okay, moving on. We have the county attorney's office. County attorney Clint Johnson is joining us. Welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chairman, Chair Lady. And
the floor is yours when, if you want to walk us through your budget.
Yes, just like everybody else, my budget is fairly simple. As everyone knows, our department is essentially, it's an inward facing department, which is for all intents and purposes, we are the general counsel to the county. So as you can see from our budget is, overwhelming majority of it is salary. We have for 2021, we have professional services, legal, and that is, we have $109,000 budgeted for that. And that is essentially monies that we will use for legal services that we, that one, are not covered by insurance. And two, if we need to go outside and get specialty lawyers, such as, you know, bankruptcy or environmental attorneys that we don't have in house, and if the county needs environmental services, legal services, then we'll go out and get those, and any other specialized legal services that we don't have in house. But we try to do a lot in house. In terms of what we have, professional services, other fees, those are fees that could run from, you know, round out legal for process, service to process, you know, PACER fees, public hearings. Every time we have a public hearing, that each public hearing costs me $600. So we never know how many of those we're gonna have per year. So that's a lot of that. Witness fees for family court or so. So a lot of that is what it is. Travel expenses, like everybody else, we've cut down on those. Conference expenses, we've cut that down tremendously. You know, miscellaneous expense memberships. Sometimes we do have, we pay for attorneys that want to be admitted in federal court in the Northern District and Southern District. The county has always paid for that. You know, periodicals, again, just miscellaneous and postage. So it's a fairly simple budget.
Are there any questions from the committee members? Okay, seeing none, I'm gonna ask a question. I noticed in your personnel position summary, the two paralegals are getting fairly significant pay cuts. Are they, are you changing their hours or are they new people? What's happening?
No, well, we had, the two paralegals were on an alternative work schedule.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the attorneys actually also. And when we were, through the process of cutting our, all the departments, 10%, I had to cut, you know, we had to just move everybody back to their regular work schedule.
And that the assistant county attorney that went from 72.6 down to 70, was that the one that was on the alternative?
Yes, correct, schedule? Correct.
And then you have one assistant county attorney that's going up. What's, is that moving to an alternative work schedule or what's happening with that? The last one listed, 1420, 1600. Going from 67,381 to 70,358.
One second, that one I don't have in front of me. But I'm, Tracy, I don't think that's going up. Is there an, I don't have that one.
We don't have names. Yeah. Our old budgets, we used to have names.
Yeah, unfortunately, yeah, I don't have that one, that sheet in front of me, Madam
Chairwoman. Maybe you could just get back to me, okay. Get back to the committee, and Jay, could follow up.
Yeah, would you mind just let me know what number, what line that is again?
Yeah, it's 1420, 1600. It's the last in the listing in the book.
Okay, got you.
It's a modest increase, but I'm paying attention to all.
Okay. Okay.
All right. Thank you. Okay. Any other questions for the county attorney? Okay. Thank you. So thank you so much for coming. Now,
yes. Thank you very much for your time.
Okay. All right. So moving on to the Board of Elections, we have Commissioners Dittus and Turco with us. I believe I see Commissioner Dittus, and I know Commissioner Turco is on the line. So I will hand the floor over to you both, however you want to handle it, and walk us through.
Ashley, you want to? Well, I personally, I don't know. It's just a typical local year budget we put in. Next year is another local year. Two elections, short of a pandemic and a bunch of executive orders, I don't see us having any problems. Any questions from your end?
Yeah, we structured this budget looking back at other local elections, but we're not sure what will happen with COVID. We've been here essential throughout. This year has been a lot different than even other past presidentials. We're not sure how that will affect us going forward into 2021. A lot of our grant funding streams expire at the end of the year, so those won't be able to be brought into the next year. So that's unfortunate. So we're trying to get a lot of tangible equipment looking forward into what we'll need going forward. I know there's been talk of resolutions to help us out with part-time pay and compensating staff. And I know we'll be looking at that early next year.
Early next year.
So any questions you guys have?
Okay, I'll open the questions. I think we're getting some. Jay can
mute.
Or if everyone could mute.
Everyone
that's not speaking, that would be great. There we go. Okay, so for the committee members, do we have any questions? Okay, so well, Commissioner Dittus did touch on an issue that we will be looking at. As a legislature, and I know that the executive's office has been alerted to it as well, both the issue of uncompensated work beyond comp time due to, I mean, I'd like to call it the perfect storm of what we're dealing with right now in terms of this election and COVID pressures, et cetera. But I think we also really need to take a longer look, and it needs to be an informed look, where we need to do an analysis of staffing with the understanding that this is a department that's facing many changes in terms of new regulations, and more are expected to be on the way that are going to continue to change the demands of the office. And so I want to be sure that we're adequately funding payroll and personnel for this office, and that we're doing it in a smart and sustainable way. And I want to right now raise the issue to be on the record, because I've been on the record in other committees on this subject. We need to be talking about space as it relates to this department now. We cannot wait until the lease comes up again, and then we have the same conversation that this is a conversation we need to be having moving forward. This is the time to start having the conversation about space and making the changes, both in terms of the office itself, which I think it needs to be an informed decision, because it's very important in terms of its connectivity and access to the public. I think the location in Uptown Kingston has been really great for that reason, but we also need to, I know that there's going to be an issue with regard to storage for the equipment. It's just something I'm putting it on the record, because I don't want to get to the point where we see that lease again. And again, we say, oh, we're going to be looking at this. it'll be too late. So I think that needs to be on the radar immediately. Legislator Heppner.
Yeah, I agree with everything you just said, Chair Bartels. And I just want to add to that, I think, you know, just to add to what we need to discuss, I think, you know, with the COVID-19 pandemic, it's exposed a lot of institutional, you know, weaknesses, I guess to say. And there's no greater institution than voting. And, you know, the struggles in which, you know, the Board of Elections has faced, again, echoing my previous comments on the, you know, the grant fund, you know, they've done an amazing job, but also even pre-COVID, there's been changes. While our structure, especially in terms of funding, have stayed the same in regard to the addition of early voting and the change of, you know, primary dates, which I think are positive things, but that also means that we have to adapt, you know, as the appropriating body. And I think, you know, we had had earlier discussions about additional staff. I absolutely agree with your sentiment that workers need to be paid for the work that they're doing. I think it's very important, but also just in terms of general support to make sure that our Board of Elections are able to deal with not only a regular year, but also to have, you know, some, you know, additional mechanisms for when we face a situation like this. Hopefully there won't be one for many years, but you never know. And I think it will take a discussion with, you know, all stakeholders involved, hopefully a very nonpartisan discussion on how we can make sure in Ulster County that, you know, I don't want us to be just, you know, the same as all 63 counties. I want us to be leaders and making voting as accessible and having the best, you know, setup and support as possible. And I think that's a discussion that's very timely, if not past due.
Legislators, this is Deputy Commissioner John Quigley. I lost audio prior to Tracy speaking, and I didn't get a chance to hear the end of Ashley. But I also just want to bring to everybody's attention that in keeping in line with what both of you guys are saying, that when our grant funding for next year comes into question for the state cycle of creating the budget, that it's going to be crucial for us to consider expending the current grants that we have in a timely manner, which would lead us up to having to expend those sometime before the end of March. And if we do so, one of the larger things we are considering is the purchasing of new machines. In order for us to do that and have room for them to be stored, we will need additional spacing as soon as possible.
Do any committee members have any further questions? Okay, go ahead, Legislator Roberts.
I just want to make a comment, you know, that I'd like to congratulate and thank the Board of Elections. They've all done a great job this year. It's amazing what they have done, you know, and they have brought some deficiencies to our attention. We're going to rectify them one way or another. It's going to be settled. I'd also like to.
Legislator Roberts, we just lost your sound. Legislator Roberts, we lost your
sound. I think his video is delayed a little bit.
Seems like every time I speak, my computer becomes unstable.
We heard that. Do you want to back up? We lost you about halfway.
I don't know where I left off on, but I just.
Oh. We don't have you. I don't know if you can hear us, but maybe give it a moment to catch up. We lost you again. Now you're unfrozen.
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay.
I'm not going to try that again.
Okay. Okay.
But I do believe, if I can, just for my time with Legislator Roberts, I believe he was just going to make a comment thanking Commissioner Turco for his time and service with the Board of Elections. So I will extend that message through my colleague, Legislator Roberts.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you, Commissioner Turco, and congratulations, not so much in advance now, to future Commissioner Quigley. Can I ask that we just take a couple minutes and maybe you could give us an update on the current state of, we don't have to go into crazy detail, but the current state of the workload, the applications that you're seeing, and the challenges that the office is surmounting and exceeding.
Yeah, if I can just give the update. We have on our system about 21,000 absentee ballot requests. If you want to put that into context, in 2016, we sent out about 7,000. So it is obviously been a spike in those kinds of requests for voting by absentee ballot. We to date have sent out a little over 20,000. So we're pretty caught up. We worked through the weekend to get us to a good place. We're at our, where we should be, which is about a daily process rate. So that's good. Right now we're catching up on a lot of voter registration so that we can build our poll book file for this Saturday as we start early voting in our 5 early voting centers. So it was very helpful that we were able to work throughout the weekend with a lot of help from part-time people as well. And we're still here, as you can see, my office is in the background, and we're grinding it out. So it's all happening over here at 284 Wall Street. If anybody would like to pop in and see, you're all welcome to come and lend a hand. Maybe we'll let you stuff some absentee ballots if you have some time.
Thank you. And thank you all for all the hard work. Legislator Guevaras.
Yeah, I just had a thought, you know, in looking at the future and trying to plan for having a new space that's large enough for you to move into, is there a way for you to potentially, after elections are over, to keep track of those who come into the office, to ask them a question of how they got there? Did they walk up there or did they arrive by vehicle? Because my suspicion is that it doesn't need to be in the downtown of Kingston. I actually think that's harder to get to because of the parking situation than it would be if you were outside of the inner part there of Kingston. I think maybe in town of Ulster even, or something else that's had, you had your own parking lot rather than trying to deal with the parking in Kingston. So I don't know if that's possible.
We could put up like a optional survey and have that, and people could give that to us. That's a good idea. Thank you.
Legislative Guevaras, I agree with you. I don't think Uptown Kingston is the perfect spot. It's just too hard to get to. In Kingston, around Kingston, definitely. But we definitely need more room and easier access. One thing we could do is all our over-the-counter absentee applications this year. We can do some kind of spreadsheet to let you know where these people came in to the counter, where they came from to the counter to get their absentees. That could help a little bit. I don't know if we could do that with other similar documents, but we'll try to put something together for you. Thank you.
Thank you.
That would be very helpful. I've always felt, and I've discussed this with Deputy Executive Ryder a little bit, that there's a natural synergy in the county building with Department of Motor Vehicles, just knowing that people are coming in to do that work as well. The challenge is finding the space in the county building, but I think it's absolutely worth investigating. Are there any other questions? All right, thank you, commissioners, deputy commissioners, for attending and for all your hard work. I know you have a couple of very long weeks ahead of you. So if you're serious about stuffing envelopes, I'll get back to you offline.
Thank you all.
Thank you. Bye.
Okay, thank you. All right, and now we are moving on to our Comptroller Gallagher is with us. Thank you very much for being here. I'm going to hand the floor over to you to walk through your budget.
Great. Thanks for the opportunity to present tonight. And thank you, Chairwoman, for filling me in on what you guys were looking for in this. I was a little unclear, but appreciate the chance. Like many of the departments here tonight, our budget is relatively simple. It's primarily driven by personnel costs. We have made some changes. Just to give you an overview of the shape of the office, it's me, a deputy controller, in normal times, a director of internal audit and control, four auditors, and a confidential secretary. We, because of the pandemic, never hired a new director of internal audit and control this year, and have chosen to zero out that line for the 2021 budget. So we will not be filling that position, but if we get a gift from Mitch McConnell, I will be back to you in a heartbeat. So if there is substantial federal aid, I will be coming for a budget amendment if possible. And the result of that, the lack of that position, pushes a bunch of work onto the four auditors. We had them working under an alternative work schedule at the beginning of the year for the first quarter. I ended that abruptly when the pandemic commenced, and I have just had it approved for the last quarter of this year. They are really pushed out beyond their regular hours without the director of internal audit and control, just to get through the claims processing, bank reconciliations, and the regular work that we do, not including trying to take a deep dive into, you know, auditing certain areas. So that's a pretty substantial change. I think overall it works out to be around an 8% budget cut. The other things that I think are interesting and exciting in our budget are that we are requesting $20,000 for computer equipment. That is actually not everything we need, and we will probably seek private philanthropy for the rest of the, to cover this particular thing, which is we are looking to purchase audit software called Teammate. It is something the office has looked at many times and has never really elevated to be of importance, but it really would handle the workflow much better. And if we cannot afford what the ultimate package that we want, then we will look to something else, but it really would improve the operations internally. We kept our supply line largely the same. Professional services, we zeroed out. We don't need that. We do have travel and conference. Please understand that we have CPE requirements for the CPA and the senior auditors. We've taken away the travel. So it's been largely reduced to about $500, which is like, if you need to drive, you know, to Albany or Buffalo for this training or the city, fine, you're not flying to Texas. Okay, just to be clear. And then on the miscellaneous contractual expense, it is made up of two components. One is attorney's fees. We have found in the past before my time here that it was very helpful to be able to hire outside counsel for certain questions. And the second part is a redo of the website. This is a nightmare for me. If you go to my website right now, I have control over one single link. I have directed it to a Google sheet where I am sharing on a regular basis all the contracts that the county approves, as well as monthly expenditure data for every month. That is not a user-friendly way to be sharing data. This website was last done many years ago under Elliot Auerbach's tenure, and it really needs a refresh. We should be able to share much more complete data. I mean, I have huge data sets from sales tax and mortgage recording tax reports that were never able to be shared with the public. So we're looking to bring more transparency through that method. So that's largely, I think, a sense of the budget, and I'm happy to answer any questions that you will have. I will say, because Tracy, you asked me to talk a little bit about COVID. We went fully remote, all but two staff people. We really did not feel like keeping everybody in the office was safe, but we had already moved everybody to a laptop with a VPN connection and a daily video chime conference call to make sure that everybody's on the same page. We now have people back in the office on a rotating basis. I mean, we've always been staffed and our doors have always been open, but now we have staff coming in and out. And at the beginning, ceased sort of on-site audit work. really mostly following, you know, the advice of the state controller. They are again doing audits, and we have conducted audits during this period. We closed out our short-term rental occupancy tax audit. We audited the staffing and capacity of the Ulster County Jail. We were invited by the sheriff for that tour. We were going to do that only on paper, and we will be completing a few other things this year. So, you know, it's affected us, but and someone asked me like, oh, well, so you're saying it hasn't hurt your productivity? Are you kidding me? COVID has hurt everybody's productivity. So yes, it has affected productivity, especially being down an entire staff member. So there you have it. Oh, wait, let me just add one last thing. The position eliminated was a management appointed position. The positions I'm seeking increased hours for are union CSEA positions.
So just for clarification, before I open the floor for questions, in terms of the changes in salaries to the union CSEA positions, those changes, this budget proposes the alternative work schedule be permanent?
Yep.
And is that moving them from 35 to 40 hours or
37.5 to 40.
37.5 to 40. Would that put everyone in the office at 40?
My deputy is not at 40. And my confidential secretary are not at 40.
Okay, I'm gonna open the floor before I ask my other questions. Legislator Heppner.
Bruce, I just wanna thank the comptroller and your office during the whole COVID pandemic. You know, the amount of information that has been coming out of your office has been extremely helpful, as well as your personal availability to myself, and I know other legislators within my caucus, and I'm sure throughout the legislature. I'm just out of curiosity, so the audit position that you're cutting from this budget, how have you been doing it? And is that how you continue to plan to do it? Or do you have a new idea going forward as, you know, you came in a really difficult year. So I'm just, you know, out of curiosity and just for all information, because I've always found that to be a very important function.
Yes. Luckily I have a terrific deputy. Lee is focused on, you know, sort of the accounting side. And I would say we have split the duties of the Director of Internal Audit and Control that are strategic, right? So that is like picking what the next thing you're going to look at is. And I have shifted certain duties to my deputy, including the bank reconciliation double check and a couple of things like that. We will continue in that way. But I have to say, I think there are things that we would be looking at and we would be able to perform more audits in a year, both financial and programmatic, if we had that position filled. What happens now, because we generate the quarterly reports and we're always busy with the claims auditing and bank work, we wind up into these troughs where we finish a big audit and then we pause while we get ready to do the next one. And I think you wouldn't see a pause in that kind of work. It would just be ongoing if we had that person here. So, you know, there are other things we'd like to look at. I mean, I'm going to use a perfect example. We sat in on the audit committee meeting. There are a number of policies that the auditors have been dinging the county for year after year that have not been completed. We should be moving those things forward. It's not that hard. You know, and those are things that really my team could take on assisting if we had that position filled. So we're going to continue in the way that we have, with Chris Quirk, the deputy, and I sort of overseeing the strategy piece, us both taking on, you know, I mean, like I'm editing reports, you know, or directing my secretary how I want things designed. It might not be like that otherwise, you know, that might be something that I would bump down. And Chris is really, you know, working with the auditors to design what are the audit questions and the objectives in every report. We would be asking the Director of Internal Audit and Control to do that before it's coming to us. So I hope that answers your question.
Thank you.
Sorry, I put myself on mute. Legislator Gavaris.
Yes, thank you. So you mentioned the teammate software. I'm actually familiar with it. you would actually, the person you're eliminating, I hate to say it, you wouldn't even need them. It is a really powerful software. It has a lot of capabilities, very intuitive. And if it's set up properly, it will point things out to you that probably a human being wouldn't capture because it is very, very powerful software. I've seen it. I've worked briefly with it. I really like TeamMate. That's definitely a very good auditing software. So if you do get that at some point, it will help to do these audits. You'll definitely pick up on a lot.
That's awesome. I've never heard that. What I did is every time I've reached out to another controller's office or, you know, auditor's office, I've asked them, you know, what do you use? What do you wish you use? And it always comes back to TeamMate. Everybody says TeamMate. If for some reason we can't afford it or make it happen this year, you know, we may get something in an interim, but I really would like to make it happen. And if I have to go beg private philanthropy for money for this, I will.
How much does it cost, if I might ask?
It's over 20. I mean, we put in like sort of what we think we should put forward as the grantee, you know, before we go out and ask, but it could be, that's an estimate based on several years ago. And I know that it's more now, could be as much as 30.
If they have a pricing structure that would allow for multiple companies or entities, it might be something that the towns and villages, if there was a way to do a county buy, because it really is a good software, it would help every one of the towns and villages if they had access to a system like this. So maybe it's a potential for purchasing to look at. They can negotiate a deal for, and any of the towns that wanted to sign on to it or the villages, and they would pay into it as well.
Very interesting idea, and I will talk to purchasing about that. Thank you.
Are there other questions from the committee? Okay, so I just would say my takeaway from this, Comptroller Gallagher, is one, I mean, I think TeamMate is deserving of further investigation. And while I appreciate I don't even know what to call it, but the suggestion that you're going to go out to the private sector, it seems to me that if it's something that would be that valuable to the department, it's a small number in the overall of our budget. And following on that, I'm concerned about, following what Legislator Heppner said, I'm concerned about the lack of the director of internal audit and control. I mean, I know it's how you determine to run your department, but from the legislative perspective, it was that position that was the key person for most of the programmatic audits. And in the absence of that person, while you may be getting through the workload and instituting a permanent alternative work schedule in its stead, I'm not sure is going to fill that gap, especially as we head into the difficult budget years ahead. And we in the legislature, I think, are going to need the additional help in these kinds of programmatic studies, because this has been a year where, we've all been sort of we've taken a kind of a back step as we've been dealing with the crisis at hand, but the longer view is going to have to come into play very quickly here. And so the absence of that position gives me concern. I mean, I plan to speak to you more about it offline, because I need to understand it better and its implications, and I need to think about it a little further as we head into the budget cycle.
I really appreciate that. And that's why, I mean, I've said to the county executive's office and the budget folks, and now I'm saying to you guys, if there is a federal stimulus package, I will be back on your doorstep, because I think it's really important. I mean, we've been muddling through without that person, but I really think it would be super productive to have them. And I think, you know, the kind of savings and revenue efficiencies that we're finding could be significantly increased. And so, you know, I'm hoping that we'll see a federal stimulus package. It probably won't happen until January, but we'll be back because I agree with you. It's really critical. And we have been collaborating with the legislature, and I feel like the relationship both between my office and the county Governor's office, as well as my office and the legislative office, particularly on the finance side, there's a lot more collaboration going on. And I think it's really working to the taxpayers' benefit. So thank you. I'll be back to you on that.
Okay. Thank you. Any other questions for the comptroller? Okay. So thank you very much for taking the time to present for us. We're going to move on to old business, the rules changes. We had, I think, a productive special meeting. And I think the best move would be to schedule probably another special meeting once we have everything aggregated in one document with notes. Would probably be a short meeting. Maybe we could put it on the back of another meeting, but we'll see what the schedule looks like for next month if we get some anticipation early on once we get a breakout of the existing resolutions. Does anyone want to speak about the rules changes at all? Okay. And then on to new business. Is there any new business anyone would like to bring up? Legislator Gavaris.
I'm not sure if it's the appropriate place or which the right forum would be, but I guess I have a question maybe more for the deputies. Is the county currently have a resource assessment and deployment initiative going on with staffing?
Say that again, sorry.
Do you have any resource assessment and deployment initiatives going on through your office? So assessing, you know, each department. So I've heard tonight, even we've heard several who have needs for staffing for short periods of time, like stuffing envelopes, for example. And then you have others who are either furloughing staff or they're redeploying them in different ways. We've done this here at the hospitals. We have a person who asked every department, what are your needs? And then we've also then gone back out to them and said, who has staff available that we can utilize in another department just to get through these intervals where you have highs and lows. There's, you know, every department's gonna have its waves. I don't know if there's anybody doing that. And if not, can we look into start doing that?
Yeah, I mean, so part of that, the assessment of need, I would say was being done with our department heads and the budget office and the deputies themselves. It was forced by the retirement incentive to look at, you know, what going forward positions are needing. As far as the short-term needs, I mean, we do have, I'll give you an example, the Recovery Service Center. And we did look at that as a way to try to assist the IS, the Board of Elections. We thought maybe they would answer some phones because that's what we were being told was one of the concerns. It didn't work out after having a meeting with them and the BOE. But we do have a unit like that that's able, and I'll just say overall, when departments come to us with needs, there's really very little silos and we're able to move people into those departments if someone is, you know, idle and not having as much work than if there's another department that has a short-term need, we can easily shift that person over there. But we haven't done a study per se.
Well, it's not more of a study. It's more of having a person that would be the conduit for between the departments with needs and the departments with resources. They would be the focal point and they would take the lead on it. So everybody knew where to go if you needed somebody or if you had somebody that can be utilized somewhere else. And I know Ashley had mentioned tonight that they were hiring part-time people to handle the workload. Potentially there are resources within our own workforce that we could redeploy to handle some of those things, like, again, stuffing envelopes.
Slater, Hepner, right. I didn't want to.
Do you mind, Chairwoman, if I chime in?
Yeah, Legislator. Okay. I wasn't sure if Mark was willing to respond, but go ahead.
I'm sorry, are you done? Did you have another response, Mark? Because I'm happy to wait.
I'm good, go ahead. I'm sorry, okay. No, part of that was paused.
Yeah. A lot of technical difficulties tonight. So first, I think Legislator Gavaris brings up a really, you know, interesting and creative idea right now. I think it's very similar to the really good work the executive's office has done under the executive order during COVID and repurposing personnel to, you know, take on some really at times extraordinary tasks during this pandemic. And I think that's, you know, going forward, it's a very interesting model to look at. I think I don't want to put words in legislator Gavaris's mouth, but like, I think that's kind of the concept he's talking about, is that ability just in normal times to redirect county employees to fill during situational, during different situations, you know, filling different needs. My only question, and I think it would be a great thing to look at and a great thing to implement, my only question would be, under CSEA contracts without an executive order, is that something that's easily done? Would a contract with CSEA impact that ability if there's not a standing executive order?
Somewhat, but I mean, I think our workforce is flexible. I think what even COVID has shown, but I think that there would be that flexibility even outside of COVID, is that they're willing to step up and do kind of what is in the greater good. I will say our innovation team, who was really crucial in setting a lot of those short-term projects up, like the Recovery Service Center, like our COVID dashboard, other things, they were over with me, you know, late February, early March. We were living kind of at the health department, setting up, getting ready for the pandemic. They would really be, I think, as they're going through next year, looking at OKRs with the budget team, some good people to kind of be in that role. Because they're looking at the different departments' needs on a kind of ongoing basis.
And just to, if I may, just to add to what Mark says, Legislator Gavaris, some of what you're talking about is essentially handled by the executive deputies or deputy executives. Mark overseeing his department, me with my departments, Evelyn with her departments. And we are in obviously constant contact with them. And we do, I mean, that's one of the priorities we require from them, is if there's a staffing issue, that we know about it, see what we can do to try to fix it. Sometimes there is a difficulty, obviously, with job titles, switching from one department to another. There have been instances where we've been able to maneuver internally. I mean, COVID has been just a dramatic difference from kind of any other year. We've seen emergency services almost completely merge with the health department and work just hand in hand with overlapping jobs. The point you bring up is, I think, critically important for managing any sort of an operation, especially one of this size. And you know, we do, and here, Mark, I know, does this quite a bit. I try to do it with my departments. Formalizing it more may be something worth looking at. With a, you know, potentially, you know, obviously a more formal analysis, but this is something we do fairly routinely, maybe not to the extent we would all hope just with the, limits of the contracts, but I think fairly, we do get a pretty significant amount of that done right now with the tools we have.
Hey, is there any other new business that anyone would like to bring up? I think that's an excellent suggestion. All right, hearing none, I'll entertain a motion to adjourn. Thank you all. Legislator Harris and seconded by Legislator Heppner. All in favor of adjournment? Aye.
Have a good night. Thank you.
Thank you all. Thank you.